It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. When smartphones and pads were first invented, and let's be clear, we're talking less than a decade ago, there were all sorts of warnings from education experts about limiting kids' screen time. Pretty much what they said was limit it to zero, especially if the kids were young. Parents, though, we know that that's a tough ask. We're on our phones, and our kids see that. Our guest today says the kids don't simply have to be on their devices. They can create media pretty easily. Christine Elgersma is a senior editor of parent education at Common Sense Media. She works on learning and social media app reviews and parent talks. Christine, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much.
We are taking your calls on this today, 800-642-1234. ideas@WPR.org. What do you think about your children using media? Have you found apps that you like? Do you keep them away? Do you limit their screen time? Do you use Common Sense Media, which I found very useful, especially when my kids were young? 800-642-1234 or ideas@WPR.org. So, Christine, talk to me. You argue that not all screen time is created equal. What do you consider, let's talk about passive screen time.
Sure. Passive screen time is where you're just sort of sitting there and absorbing what's being sort of washing over you. So that includes television, movies, YouTube videos, things that you're not really interacting with, that don't take a lot of thought in terms of applying it to what you're consuming, and there's nothing, you know, inherently wrong with those things. We can be inspired by movies and television and YouTube videos. We can be changed by them and moved in many ways. I think the question is then, what's the next step? What do you do with that inspiration and that feeling of being transformed? I think that's the really cool next step that that sometimes we miss with kids. So they're watching movies, they're doing all these things, and we really want them to be able to create as well, so to take that inspiration and make it into something new.
And so beyond interacting with screen time, you're talking actually about kids being able to create media. Are we talking on their iPads? Are iPads made for that? Or are we talking on actual computers?
I think it could be either one. I think there are lots of different ways that kids are finding to create things. So, you know, you think about kids aspiring to be YouTube stars, which is, you know, one of the things that kids really, really want to be able to do. And, of course, you know, there are some risks and some things that parents want to take into consideration if their kid expresses interest in that. But that is a way to create and to express yourself. But there are also, you know, for younger kids who might not be ready to have a YouTube channel, there are apps, and there are many things that can, websites, things that kids can do that can take whatever their interest is and make it a vehicle for a means to actually make things themselves.
So talk to me about what some of these websites are, or apps are.
Yes. So, you know, depending on your kid's interests, there are lots of different things available. So let's just say for really little kids, if you have a small kid and you find it's okay for them to use some apps, there are some really great apps, especially for storytelling, that little kids can use. So open-ended play is best for toddlers and preschoolers. So, you know, you don't want a lot of rules. You don't want them trying to earn points. That's not really the best play pattern for little kids. But if you can find an app where they can tell a story, and, of course, it's best if you're able to use the app with them or at least check in with them and ask them some guiding questions. But, for instance, Toca Boca has some really great apps, and some of them actually have the ability to record your kid telling a story as they're playing in these sort of virtual playhouses or doll houses, so you can move pieces around. And there are a million options in those apps, so it feels, it's not completely unlimited, but it is a good way for kids to be able to create a story.
So,
and if a parent is able to check in and say, what's that character doing? Where are they going? And prompt, then the kids be able to actually tell a story as they play.
And so do the kids then hear that story back after they've told it?
They can, yes, if they record it.
That's really quite interesting to me. So you talked about risks for YouTube. I've thought about this a lot. My kids watch YouTube a lot. They do not do YouTube. And I think they have sort of an inherent fear of that. Talk to me about what the risks are, especially for people who are like 10, 11, 12 years of age.
Right. You know, I think as parents, we all know that YouTube is a real, really mixed bag of content.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there is a setting where you can make it slightly safer. It's not perfect, but in terms of what they watch, it's good to monitor. And for kids who are really chomping at the bit to be creators on YouTube, I think it's great to start with a private channel. So instead of just opening it up to anybody to comment on, it'd be good to just have, you know, people that they know see the videos first so that it's not sort of open season.
Mm-hmm.
And you also don't necessarily want your kids to have a digital footprint or, you know, a digital legacy of any kind at certain ages. So depending on your comfort level with them having a channel, having videos posted on the internet, that's something to consider. But a private channel is probably a good way to start.
You know, I should note that the American Academy of Pediatrics' latest recommendations show that children as young as 24 months old can learn words from live video chatting or from an interactive touch screen. They still recommend that people under 24 months old, under 2 years old, not have screen time at all. Do you agree with that?
Yes, I do. I think, you know, it's hard in our world of 24/7 digital media to avoid having a baby see a screen of any kind.
Mm-hmm.
They're probably going to see you use your phone. They're going to see the screen. I think, you know, not putting your baby down in front of the television or having them try to use iPad apps without you there, independently as a baby is
right.
Not ideal, and I think that makes common sense. But with parental interaction, using apps can be really valuable and can be a great shared experience. But also for toddlers, things like Skype or FaceTime, when there's actual social interaction, there are benefits to that. It's not the same as that passive screen time we were talking about. So it can have positive social benefits.
We are talking with Christine Elgersma of Common Sense Media, and we're taking your calls about screen time for your kids. Do you use apps that your kids use to create things? Do your kids have a lot of passive screen time? Is it just too much work for you and you just keep them away from the screen as much as possible? 800-642-1234 is the number. You can also email us at ideas@WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Christine, we talked about opportunities that this presents. My kids in fifth grade started to learn to code, and you're saying that kids even younger than this can learn to code.
Yes, there are some excellent apps for little kids if they express an interest or if it's something you want to introduce to them. There are lots of coding tools, and some of the ones for little kids have a block coding language. So you're basically just taking blocks of code and linking them together. They're not actually learning, you know, the Python language at,
mm-hmm.
at age five.
Right.
But you can string these commands together and make, you know, robots move or make things happen on the screen. And I think what's really cool for kids is that they get this sense of control over, you know, coding, over the device, over what they can create. They can make things happen instead of just receiving it. But also there's some great learning benefits like executive functioning.
Mm.
So they're learning how to do things step by step, and they're learning what different commands might mean. And then as they get older, there are different apps that they can use to kind of bridge the gap between block coding and actually writing their own code.
This is very interesting. We are taking your calls this morning. May from Madison, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi.
Good morning.
Hi, May.
I just want to share that I have two boys, and they love watching YouTube videos, especially watching other kids. What we do is we allow them to do that, and they can select whichever videos they want to watch. But what we do require them to do is present it to us after they're done watching so they can work on their public speaking as well as what they would do differently. What they like the most and what they don't like.
Uh-huh.
Just working it with them that way, it feels like they really like that engagement with us.
So you teach them to watch media critically.
Correct. Yeah,
okay.
Without judging them. So we want to make sure they can express how they feel. And this was one way, and we've been doing it for 2 years now, and it's working really well.
That's really brilliant, May. Thank you very much. So a lot of parents do this. They, you know, they sit and watch media, whether it be YouTube or whether it be TV or something on Netflix. They sit and watch it with their kids and engage with them on that. You recommend that, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. And boy, May's idea is excellent.
Yeah.
So many reasons. Not only does it get you involved in what your kids are interested in and what they're watching, but also, you know, they're working on skills, like you were saying, critical thinking. They're evaluating media, and then they're also presenting it in a way that's going to make sense to somebody else. So that's a really great idea.
Right. They're taking what they're learning and they're interpreting it. And we all know that we learn better when we teach.
Yes, absolutely.
So I want to go back to something else you said. Toddlers can get a lot of good out of FaceTime or Skype or interacting with people. But do toddlers really understand that this is a different person that's on the screen, that it's their dad they're talking to on this screen?
You know what's fascinating is that they do. So, you know, research has shown that when kids are interacting with a parasocial character on a screen, they really develop a relationship with that character, which can aid learning from a screen. So I think the real key is that sort of reflective interaction that FaceTime provides. And yes, babies and toddlers can identify the person on the other end of that screen. And it may not be immediately crystal clear, especially to babies, but the reflection of and reaction of the other person to what the baby's doing, that's really where that value comes from, so that it's sort of in the moment reflection of the baby.
We are talking about screen time. Christine Elgersma from Common Sense Media is with us today, and we are taking your calls, 800-642-1234. What do you think about screen time for your kids, even your toddlers? We'll be back in a moment. It's The Morning Show. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. We're talking this morning about giving our kids the tools to be media savvy and to create media for themselves. Christine Elgersma from Common Sense Media says that it takes intention on the parts of parents, especially parents with younger children. How do your kids use technology that you give them? Do they have their own smartphone or tablet, or do they share one that's for the family? And what have you learned from watching your children work with technology? Give us a call, 800-642-1234. ideas@WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. So, Christine, I want to dig in a little bit more to this, how kids can create and tell stories using media. Talk to me about that with younger kids, starting with younger kids.
Okay. Well, as I said, there are some apps where kids can create a story through open-ended play, so apps like Toca Life. There's a whole series that will, you know, probably engage any kid because they cover so many topics, school, pets, you know, almost anything your kid might be interested in. But aside from that, there are some other apps that are really cool that have more of an animation element. So an app like Toontastic is really interesting because you're moving the pieces around and you're recording a story, but it's really teaching the kid that your story needs a beginning, a middle, and an end. And it encourages kids to use, you know, props and different interesting things so they get a sense of what all the elements that storytelling involves. So it's sort of a level up from just verbally recording a story as you're playing. And then as kids get older, if they start to get more interested in telling their own stories, There are some opportunities like the Scholastic Kids Press Corps, so they can actually get involved in telling news stories that are, you know, kid-appropriate. There's Book Creator, which is a way that kids can create something that looks more like a real book. And, you know, kids who are a little more reluctant, I think, to write or to, or they feel like they don't have a story to tell, sometimes apps that have animation qualities or comic book qualities or feel very relevant somehow to an interest of theirs, those are things that, or there's an actual audience on the other end of it. Sometimes kids who just feel like they're creating in a vacuum, it doesn't mean a lot, but if they're actually going to present it to an audience, that makes a big difference. So if you can find the key to unlock that interest and inspiration in your kid, there's probably an app that will match it as well.
There are a lot of kids who may not just be interested in technology, or what they're interested in doesn't necessarily serve them with technology. How do parents deal with that?
That's a great question. I think if they are already interested in making things, if they're makers and they're creating things and expressing themselves off screen, I think that's great. And I think if they, you know, eventually do express an interest in tech tools that might help them take it another step further or reach a larger audience, then that might be a good way to introduce it. But I don't think there's any reason to push tech on your kids if they're not expressing a natural interest in it, unless you think that, you know, they should be developing a certain skill or it's going to help them take their work one step further.
I'm interested in how tech can interact with sort of the things we used to do. Like, is there an app that helps kids play tag? You know, outside they're playing tag, and maybe there's an app that says you're safe or something like that. Have we integrated tech into those kinds of activities?
Yes. It's not necessarily an app, but there are tons of tech toys that are meant for outdoor play. So, you know, gear that kids can wear that sort of becomes a laser tag situation.
Mm-hmm.
Not as cumbersome as when you actually go to the laser tag place, but there are lots of toys that have tech elements that encourage outdoor play as well.
If a child is creating media on an iPad or a smartphone or a computer, do they need to necessarily be creative? Do they necessarily need to actually, you know, bring a lot of creativity to it?
I think it depends on the tool that they're using, but absolutely there are lots of tech tools that come sort of out of the box that make it really easy for kids, whether it's a coding app or storytelling or an art app. There's one that I just reviewed recently called iOrnament that reminds me a lot of Spirograph from when I was a kid.
Oh,
I don't know if you remember.
Yeah,
Spirograph.
I do.
I loved it. It was the best. And so this app actually sort of mimics that creation style in that it's geometric and makes a pattern, but it has so many more elements. You can zoom in, zoom out. There are a ton of tools. So it's very creative. And also, it helps explain the math behind what you're creating. But it makes it very easy for a kid to feel like they're being creative. There's a music app also called Lily. And you're creating music with these tiny flowers, and each petal is a note, and you can change the pitch, and you can change the rhythm, and how it all fits together. But you don't have to really understand music theory. And so if that's something you want your kid to be interested in, or if they've expressed an interest, but maybe, you know, you're not giving them piano lessons, it's a nice bridge, and it's a nice way for them to dip their toe in without having to really understand all the pieces of it as they would if they were doing something off screen.
So I have a question here about kids with disabilities. Are there apps and games and technology that specifically help kids who have disabilities deal with and learn about the world around them?
Yes, there are. Ones that I think of specifically are apps that help kids communicate. So if kids have trouble speaking on their own, there's lots of technology that can help them give their thoughts voice. So if whether it's tapping words on a screen or stringing together a sentence, there are a lot of tools that help. There are also tools for kids who have trouble reading because of dyslexia or other reading issues, and that make it easier, make it more accessible. And, you know, I think you could probably go down the line for different learning and attention issues and find an app that will help.
And what about kids who can't really interact or touch with this, you know, touch the screen? Are there apps that are more audio based?
There are, yes. There are some voice controlled, and there are specific tools that have more to them than just an app, but things that will help kids, again, express themselves, but without the use of having to accurately tap on a screen, yes.
We are talking about media for kids with Christine Elgersma, and we're taking your calls, 800-642-1234. What do you allow your kids to use in terms of screens? Do they have a smartphone? At what age did you give them a smartphone? 800-642-1234, or ideas at WPR.org. Christine, I have a friend whose son is an amazing artist, but she cannot get him to stop doing his art just on the iPad and actually drawing on paper now. And he's to the point where he's going to high school and he wants to get into a specific program and they want to see stuff on paper. How do you balance that? How do you transfer, I'm doing all this stuff on technology to, oh, I have to do stuff in real life now?
Yes, that is a tricky question, and I think, you know, it's more easily addressed, I think, when kids are younger, because they're a little bit more open to, hey, let's take this drawing and we'll extend it off the screen onto paper. And there's actually an app that does that called Drawnimal, where you are looking at a screen, but you're drawing on paper. But for a kid who's a little more dug in, they're a little older, and they're saying, no, I don't want to do this. I think then it becomes that question of relevance and audience. So how motivated is he to transfer those skills to paper? And maybe there's an app that encourages that. I haven't seen that, but it would be interesting to see also if there are potential apps like Google Art where kids can explore artists' work. There are several apps like that where kids can look at what artists do and they can try to mimic it. But that might be another way to parlay it into look at what these artists have done. Is there a way for you to interpret it or to do it off screen? And let's see what you can come up with.
So, you know, I kind of see this as it's easy to do it on screen, and we sort of rely on the tools there, and maybe we're a little afraid to pull back and do it the old-fashioned way. Is there a danger to that?
That's a good question. I definitely think that using screens to the exclusion of anything else, you know, depending on the field we're talking about or the topic, that yes, there are things that can get lost, just like, you know, if we're only doing it the old-fashioned way and we're not using technology, there are some opportunities that we're missing. So I think finding that balance between the two is really a key, and I know that can be easier said than done in many cases. But yes, I do think that, you know, the difference between mixing your own paints physically and putting them to paper and controlling the brush with your hand is very different necessarily from using a screen where the tools are more embedded. But I would also argue that if that kid that we were talking about is really interested in graphic design, you know, in the end, if that's where his real passion is, there's a huge wide open field for that as well. So while it's great to have both sets of skills, I also think that as we move forward, I think it's okay to tap into the passion that lives on screen and really explore it fully, as long as it's in balance with other elements of your life.
We are talking about screen time for kids. Our guest today says that screen time actually can help kids grow. We actually had a caller earlier who said that she uses screen time to help her kids interpret and tell stories. They watch YouTube videos and then tell their parents what they just saw. How do you use videos with your kids? We're asking parents, grandparents, caregivers, how are your children using technology? Do you limit the technology that they use? Do you limit it maybe sometimes during the summer and give them books instead? Are there camps or classes where you're sending your kids to learn coding and to create things? Educators, how do you use technology in the classroom? Do you wish that you could use it better? Give us a call, 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org, or you can tweet WPR Mornings. So, Christine, one of the things that I'm really interested in is how easy it has become to make a movie, to tell a story on video. Talk to me about the apps that do that.
Well, for little kids, one that I was talking about before is Toontastic. That's a great way to start. Mm-hmm. But there are a ton of other apps as well. So there's Lipa Theater, Storymaker. That's another one. There's Goldieblocks and the Movie Machine. And they sort of can ramp up. So you can start from a very basic level, and then as kids get older, they can become a little bit more complex. Like VidMaker, which is a 3D movie maker for kids. There's some stop-motion animation apps. There are green screen apps that kids use. So there are lots of ways to kind of to change that interest into lots of different kinds of output, and in lots of different ways, so they can explore different techniques and different ways to tell stories. So, yes, there are a ton of things to choose from.
I'm interested also in a lot of families can't afford a lot of digital equipment. So what kinds of equipment, what's the bare minimum that they need to be able to access a lot of these apps?
Well, research shows that, 98% or somewhere upwards of 90% of homes now have at least one smartphone available. And that's really all you need. So if you can't have an iPad, if you can't have a tablet, then if your kid is able to use that smartphone occasionally, there are also lots of great free educational apps. I would say, free apps, that's kind of a different story. That's a really mixed bag, but there are free educational apps made by respected institutions. And we have a list on Common Sense if you're interested. It's just called free educational apps and websites. But that's a great way to start if you're on a tight budget, to just choose apps that you can trust and that aren't going to break your bank.
I should note that there are, when you're watching children's television, often the makers of that television, PBS is one good example, will say, if you want to learn more, go to our app or go to our website, and you can interact in this particular way. And free apps also are there to teach kids just basic stuff, reading and arithmetic. Are there any good ones out there that you recommend?
Yes. And again, we have a very long curated list on our site, so you can take a look and kind of look at all the different options. But one reading app that I really love is called Homer. And the reason I love it is because it's scaffolded, it's leveled. A lot of thought and care was put into creating it and then making it even better so that kids have an individualized learning path. There's also something called Pigeon Mail, and my kid actually used this app and loved it very much. And so you could, to your parents or grandparents, you can send Pigeon Mail, which is super cute.
And my it's kind of like a text, but it's Pigeon Mail.
Yes, but it's safe and it's contained, but it adds a social element. It helps them show what they're learning, which is really fun for kids, and it makes them, take pride in what they're doing. But that's a great one for reading. And then motion math apps, they have one unified app, and it's a subscription model, but they have some really great math apps that start from a very young age and then kind of go up the spectrum. And they make learning math really relevant to kids. So there's one game that involves making cupcakes and selling them, which is something, you know, you can pretend to do that off screen, but when it's built into a screen and it becomes a game, it can make math feel like a really integrated and relevant part of your life, which is what we want math to be. So it's pretty great.
So we want math to be an integrated and part of your life. I, as an adult, gained a lot of math skills from Khan Academy. And I did this because when my kids were small, I wanted to be able to keep up with them. And it had been years since I'd done really any math except, you know, maybe business math. So talk to me about apps for adults and Khan Academy in particular.
Well, Khan Academy, you know, is a great free resource, and it has a ton of videos that you can watch that can walk you through lots of different things. And there are also tons of websites and apps that offer courses for teens and adults. And some of them are free, and some of them are subscription, and some of them are pay course by course. There was one that I actually recently reviewed, and I'll see if I can pull up the title. But it's actually, it offers courses, and then for a subscription, kids can actually earn college credit through the app.
Interesting.
Depending on what college they're going to go to. So, you know, for a $200 subscription, which sounds extremely expensive, you might be able to earn college credit. So if you compare the $200 to, you know, the cost of different college courses, it might actually be beneficial.
But it depends on your college course. It's interesting to me that one of my kids does not like Khan because you have to watch the video. And she wants something much more interactive. So there is a difference between learning by watching and learning by, you know, being able to actually manipulate the things on screen.
Yes, that's true. And, you know, different learning styles definitely can dictate which tech tools might be best for your kid or what combination of you know, watching a video and then using manipulatives. And then doing it on paper and maybe doing a few on screen. There are some cool apps by Dragonbox, and they also have apps for younger kids, just addition, subtraction, arithmetic based. But then as you move forward, they have a really cool way to teach algebra. So sometimes algebra becomes a real sticking point for kids because of the abstract thinking that goes into, you know, variables.
Dragonbox, so, is that what that's called?
Yeah, Dragonbox Algebra, okay. And they have a 5-plus and a 12-plus, depending on the level. But what's cool is that they teach it with symbols that aren't, you know, X and Y at first. Mm. Kids can really grasp the concept of what they're doing first by moving things around and interacting. And then later, it, you know, it scaffolds them into now what those symbols really are these abstract things called variables. And really, you're just applying what you've already learned to the, you know, what the math actually looks like on paper.
We are talking to Christine Elgersma from Common Sense Media about media for kids and how to create media. We're taking your calls, 800-642-1234. We'll be back with some of those calls and more discussion in a moment. Talking to Christine Elgersma on the Ideas Network this morning about media and how our kids are interacting with media. We're taking your calls, 800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@wpr.org. Joe from Eagle River, welcome to the program.
Hi, Gary. First of all, welcome to Wisconsin.
Thank you very much, sir.
I'm calling in regards to the comment about families having access to technology, and I'm fortunate enough to be a trustee on my local library here in Eagle River, and I have to tell you that we have, in the remodel and expansion of our library, we added something called a Tinker Studio, and I have to admit I only understand half of what's in it. But more importantly, our librarians and our library staff knows what's in it and how to use it and to teach people to use it. It's just marvelous. The kits that can be checked out for families to take home or to use while in the library and in that Tinker Studio. There's the ability to work with audio and video, so it's a tremendous resource. The other thing that we have is one of my companions on the trustee board is the head librarian for Northam Pines Schools, and she just sent me an email because I have a question about my smartphone that I'm not so smart at using, and it just so happens that on a probably a biweekly basis, our library has students set aside time, be 3 hours next Thursday, for us Ogeezers to bring our technology
in. Oh, that's hilarious.
And have those teenagers help us learn how to use it. So there's some marvelous resources here all over.
That is hilarious, and I'm going to check out to see if there's something like that here in Madison. That's awesome. Teenagers need a sense of purpose sometimes, and that they definitely know technology better than we do. So thank you, Joe, for that suggestion and that and letting us know that. Christine, Joe said something that I found interesting, that people can take kits from the library and take them home and build things. There are actually kits to build computers, aren't there?
There are, yes. And I am not an expert in those type of kits, but there are lots of different digital toys that where kids can put things together and learn robotics and build computers as well. There are tons and tons of those on the market. There's one called Little Bits that might be a good starting point if your kid expresses interest, where they're snapping together blocks that have different functionality, but they're actually building sort of a mini robot. But it's simple enough that that it's accessible.
We've got a question from Matt in Milwaukee. Matt, welcome to the program.
Hi, Christine.
Hello.
I have a question about augmented reality. Do you know if there's any apps or tools that are engaging with kids right now using those technologies?
Yes, that's a really great question. Thank you, Matt. I think probably the most popular one that most people have heard about is Pokemon Go, which for
right.
some people sort of became a scourge, and for others, it's still super fun, and some people are still playing it. But that's, the first title that comes to mind. But another really cool one, if you have a kid who's kind of interested in space, the planets, the stars, there are lots of different apps where you can point your phone up at the sky and, see where the actual stars are. It's sort of an overlay over the sky. And so they get more of a scientific view of what they're looking up at. There are others where you can build 3D models in augmented reality or build your own solar system in augmented reality. So, yes, I think it's a growing market. When I first started reviewing them, there were only a handful. But more and more now that ArtKit is available on iOS, the developers are able to use that in really cool ways.
So thank you for that comment, Matt. I have to tell you, Christine, the Pokemon Go thing, I was one of the people that was very annoyed by it because there were a lot of people walking around not looking where they were going. They were just looking at their screen.
Yes, that is a real risk. And I hate to say it, but sadly, Pokemon Go, I think, exacerbated that problem. I see it even now, people not playing Pokemon Go, not looking where they're going. So absolutely, that is a skill that we have to remind kids that when they're walking down the street, you cannot be staring at a screen.
We can, yes.
Because people are wandering into dangerous places.
Yes, and also that translates to when you start driving, you should not be staring at a screen. I mean,
absolutely.
We need to teach that early. I should note also that we're going to be doing a show, I believe, coming up soon on the solar system, on stars, how to stargaze. So that's going to be really cool, too. YouTube is full of these videos that kids watch. Some of them are some of them are really helpful, like, you know, how to do different hairstyles. Some of them I look at, though, and I'm like, it's a video of somebody opening plastic eggs to reveal tiny toys or ripping open small packages with prizes inside. And little kids love this stuff.
They love that. Yeah.
I have no idea why that they're so hypnotized by this. But why and what are they learning, and how can parents then leverage that?
That's a great question. Yes, unboxing videos are huge, and I think some of it is the anticipation and the way that it's revealed in the video. And I have lots of friends who have kids who pretend that they're on YouTube, and so they're acting out, you know, here's this thing, and I'm going to open it. And so they're sort of acting out the unboxing. And I think that is one way, not that you're actually giving them their own YouTube channel at 4 or 5, but if they're super interested in those, and, you know, it's not the highest quality content, I would say there are probably better things to balance it with. But if they're really into it, I think there are ways to transfer that off screen. And to, you know, what's going to be in the box, why are you choosing those things, sort of make it into a storytelling and then a presentational element. But, yeah, that is quite a phenomenon, unboxing.
It is quite a phenomenon. One of our producers, Brianne Chasseau, tells me, this does not surprise me, by the way. I've known Brianne for like a month and a half, and it does not surprise me. She created her own newspaper when she was a tween, and she is obviously a journalist and a news junkie. How do we help parents support kids as they consume news?
Yes, and I think, you know, it is very difficult, especially when there are very upsetting things in the news. So the key is really to be able to explain things in a kid-appropriate way. And some news is really tricky to do that with because it's scary. But if your kid is hearing about things or seeing things, trying to let them know, you know, there's that famous line from Mr. Rogers, which is to look for the helpers. When something terrible happens, look for the helpers. And I think that's a really great way to frame it for a kid. You know, here are these things that are happening, and it can be scary and upsetting. And also, here are some of the people who are helping and trying to make the situation better. So at least it's sort of a balanced view of what's going on.
We are taking your calls about children's media. How much do you let your kids interact with media? How much are you amazed at these things like unboxing videos that your kids are just mesmerized by? And how do you take it to the next level? Give us a call, 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Marcus from Madison, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Ms. Eldersmith. Here's the result of the last 10 years of Americans following their phones around. The Department of Education does a very good study, internationally recognized, excellent study every couple of years on the educational levels of adults in the 39 OECD countries, what we laughingly refer to as the developed world, because we have cell phones and automobiles and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
American adults finished in the 2017 study dead last in numeracy. We're the worst with numbers in the developed world, and 35th out of 39 in literacy, the very bottom tier possible. This is what following your phone around has accomplished for American adults. So by all means, put your children in front of a screen. Don't let them develop any tactile skills or any solitude in which to ruminate on their experience. Keep them in front of a screen. Now, WPR and public radio generally is completely uncritical about the use of this technology and is in complete denial about the actual results. There are overwhelming studies that show this retards social development, cognitive abilities. Would you address this, please?
Okay, so thank you, Marcus. I'm struck, Christine, that he's talking about U.S. literacy rates and U.S. numeracy rates, but in the developed world, in Europe, in Australia, what have you, there are lots of cell phones and lots of interaction, and they have better literacy rates. So is there definitely a correlation between between media and how our kids are doing?
You know, I think the thing to keep in mind is that I am definitely not a proponent of, you know, plopping your kid in front of a screen and letting them follow their phone around. I think that there are actual risks and there are downsides to depending upon technology and to, you know, not having things in balance. So we talk about using technology as a tool, using it mindfully, taking advantage of the opportunities that exist within it, and at the same time, it needs to be one piece of the puzzle. So absolutely, kids should be reflecting upon their experiences and doing activities off screen and learning in using various modes. So I think that is a valid point. And, you know, in terms of literacy rates, I don't know what the correlations are in terms of, you know, different countries and how much technology they use and what effect it has on the different rates of learning. But I do know that lots of countries other than the U.S. use technology at about the same rate. And, you know, if their educational rates are different, I think there are lots of complicated factors that play into that. And it's not just the role of technology.
We are taking your calls. Linda from Athelstane, welcome to the program.
Hi. I was just going to tell you how I have a granddaughter that lives in Toronto, and she's 3.5. And
aww.
Every morning when she's having her breakfast, she calls Grammy and FaceTimes. And so then when I do get to see her, it isn't like this stranger coming into her life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she knows me. And then my 11-year-old granddaughter watched a lot of YouTube videos, but now she's writing her own graphic novel on her iPad, you know, and drawing all the pictures. And, you know, so it can be really great to have some of this technology if it's, you know, limited.
Thank you very much, Linda. I appreciate that. Liz from Menominee, this is probably going to be the last call. Liz, welcome to the program.
Hi. My daughter, who is actually now an adult, is enamored with these videos where you're watching someone else play a video game and comment on it. It drives me crazy, actually. But what is the appeal of it, and is there any value to doing this, or is it just sheer entertainment? What's going on?
You want to take that, Christine?
Yes, that's a great question, and it's one that many parents have, because when you're watching your kid watch another person play a video game, it looks insane, I think, to many parents. And I think, you know, partly depending upon the game itself, especially, you know, things like Minecraft or Fortnite, things that take a little bit of critical thinking and strategy, kids like to watch those things, yes, for entertainment and also to learn better ways to approach the game.
There
is an evaluative and critical thinking element in it, but also some kids just like to watch people play these video games that they might not have access to or that are just interesting to them.
This has been a fascinating look at digital in the lives of our children with Christine Elgersma. She's a senior editor of Parent Education at Common Sense Media. Thanks for joining us, Christine.
Thank you so much for having me.
The Morning Show is produced by Colleen Leahy, Brianne Shasso, Chris Molina, Laura Pavin, and Sarah Hopeful. Michael Derringer is our technical director. Keely Butina is the executive producer. I'm Carrie Kaufman, and this is the Ideas Network.